You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
Welcome back here on New Hampshire Now on 914.50 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. We are inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio, where this hour of the program is presented by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op, and that segment of the show presented, or this segment of the show presented by the Barley House. The road to the White House begins at the Barley House, home of America's best burger, and WKXL's Pints and Politics series, which is presented by New England College. We heard from Ryan Cochran Siegel earlier in the program. Skier who won the giant slalom yesterday at Waterville Valley as the U.S. Alpine Championships came to a close there. So welcome in Taylor Caswell right now on the program. He is New Hampshire's Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner, and it really meant a lot. The crowds, particularly yesterday, not huge, but it meant a lot to have the U.S. Alpine Championships here in New Hampshire and to have it in the East and have New Hampshire as the backdrop for it. I don't think it was, you know, the event that, you know, we'd certainly envisioned in regards to you know, the top-notch skiers having Michaela Schifrin going, having some TV side of things. But I still think a pretty significant event, and it'll come back in 2 years. And as, you know, the Olympics become more of a an aspect of things, I think this is a big and a nice starting point for New Hampshire and skiing.
Yeah, no question. I mean, this is part of the whole ongoing legacy of New Hampshire ski racing. And Michaela Schifrin did show up.
She did. She was there on Saturday.
She came by to sort of help promote the program. But, you know, New Hampshire, I mean, the U.S. ski team is in a little bit of a rebuild, with the exception of Schifrin, who set all sorts of records this year. And it's too bad that we couldn't have her race in front of our crowd here in New Hampshire. But she won, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 World Cup globes, including the overall. So she was probably kind of tired. And but it's an opportunity to showcase and see what's coming for the U.S. team, and to have that right here in New Hampshire and in one of our race venues in the state that brought Bodie Miller to the stage, really, I think, was a great event.
Yeah, indeed it was. And what do you see as being the overall health of the ski industry here in New Hampshire? And it's been, in the last couple of weeks, we've been having discussions about climate change and the effect that climate change is having on New Hampshire and other states. And that a lot of the political aspect of this, you know, the catastrophic type of discussions may be overblown. We talked with Professor Avilas of Plymouth State University, who runs the meteorology department there, about climate change and what's taking place. But there's, you know, obviously warming that is occurring. The scientists agree in regards to that. Where the disagreement is, particularly on political lines, is what you do about this moving forward and the severity of the issue. Do you see there being impacts on the ski industry? And is there concern amongst the ski industry on this topic?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think the long-term trends that we're seeing are definitely shortening the potential of snow every winter. It puts a heavy emphasis on snowmaking and the technology of snowmaking. Most of our ski areas in New Hampshire have made pretty significant investments in their snowmaking equipment. Cannon Mountain, for example, last year or two or three, maybe it was 2 or 3 years ago now, put in a brand new snowmaking system and completely changed the game.
Mm-hmm. Pat's Peak has done that as well.
Right. And little areas like Crotchet have also made those investments. The ski industry itself is really sort of diversifying. And you see a lot of the smaller areas, like you said, like Pat's Peak. And then you have the more traditional larger mountain areas like Loon or Cannon or Waterville and Bretton Woods, all of them operating with different types of models. But one of the things you see pretty consistently through all of them is really an adaptation to whether it's economic conditions or climate conditions. You can probably argue that. But things like downhill mountain biking in the summer, or mm-hmm. the zip lining at Bretton Woods. I know Loon Mountain is making some pretty substantial investments in their trail network for summertime use mm-hmm. this coming summer, as does Waterville and several others in Vermont. Burke Mountain has got probably as much of a revenue source through downhill mountain biking in the summertime as they do skiing in the winter. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think the ski industry is very strong. It's part of a lot of that adaptation that's going on, both as a result of climate change, but also I think as a result of the changing market for tourism.
Yeah, I feel that it is twofold, in that now is the time where the profits are where they are to make investment in regards to the summer months, with the knowledge and expectation that
you know, the ski areas study this stuff very, very closely, and how much snow they get, how much snow they have to make, when they opened, obviously, 1 year versus when they opened another year, when they closed 1 year versus another year, and they look at the patterns, and most of that is driven by weather and temperature. So they are very well aware of whether the climate is warming or not, because they have the evidence right in front of them. And the time now is for that, you know, strategic investment, knowing that winters may get shorter moving forward, the ski season may get shorter moving forward. So the economy is changing in regards to, as we've talked about, what folks are looking for in their vacations, but also, you know, what folks, what these ski resorts need to do in order to perhaps turn more profit moving forward, making their strategic investments now as the ski season, you know, may get shorter moving forward. And you referenced the snowmaking side of things. And to a lot of folks outside of, you know, skiers, they may think that the ski industry is driven by snow. And that is a very small percentage of the actual snow that is made. Snow is significant mostly just for marketing purposes, where if it's snowing in Massachusetts or snowing in here in the lower part of the state, you know, you tend to you know, think that, oh yeah, it's a great time to go skiing, because it is, and powder skiing is the best. But that's more significant in terms of getting snow rather than the base, which is generally all snow that has been made over a period of time.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, and you know this as well as anybody, this time of year is some of the best skiing you can have.
Yeah.
You know, right here in Concord, you wouldn't think that there was any snow anywhere. But you get up north of Plymouth, and you start to notice a little bit more white on the ground.
There's a lot of snow and, at Water Valley, Loon, Cannon.
Yeah. Yep. And the skiing is really good. And it's mostly, you know, a lot of it's sort of, you know, those of us who like to ski without a whole huge crowd, which isn't really exactly what the ski areas are looking for.
Right.
But at the same, it's the same time. The snow quality is really, really good right now, and it's a good time to take advantage of what's been overall a pretty good winter. And but you're right, I think that a lot of that is due to the snowmaking. And you look at Cannon Mountain is a perfect example, just because they have that front five that faces 93. If you're on your way to Bretton Woods or you're on your way up north and you drive by and all those are grass, you are not getting off at exit 34C and going to go over to the Peabody Lodge. No, you're going to just keep going. So no question, it's a good way to make sure that people recognize that we do have snow there, and you can get out and have a good day.
Yeah, Waterville Valley yesterday for the Alpine Championships, I got a couple runs in, believe it or not, outside of watching the skiing and doing some interviews. And yeah,
the forerunner.
Conditions were a little bit rough, but this time of year with the sunlight that we're having and how late the sun shines, the views are absolutely magnificent. As you referenced, the crowds are small. You're out there by yourself. It's the best time of year you know, to ski. And if you get a couple late season storms with some powder on the ground, it's even better. But this is a great time.
It's for us, the residents, people who live in this state. This is our time.
Exactly. Right. It was great at Water Valley yesterday. Anyway, that is Taylor Caswell, Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner, joining us here for our focus on the Hampshire economy. This hour of the show is presented by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the program presented by the Barley House. Switch gears a little bit. We'll talk some budget here, and also a little bit in regards to a new report out about taxation and New Hampshire. And New Hampshire continues to make significant national headlines in regards to taxation here in the Granite State.
Yeah. It turns out this group, Wallet Hub, that does a lot of these kind of rankings, they did a return on investment analysis for taxes.
Do you find them to be, I mean, they're a group that's come about over the last couple of years. You find that to be them to
they
be?
They take interesting angles. They don't do the sort of usual, like, just pile together a couple of data points and come up with some ranking. They actually do a little bit of an analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't always rise to the top in all of their rankings, and they do all sorts of different rankings. But we do show up pretty high in most everything they do as it relates to financial and tax-related stuff. But the return on investment analysis included all sorts of data points, including schools and then the education and healthcare and jobs availability and labor force participation and the business environment and the overall taxes that are charged for revenue to the state. And New Hampshire came in number one for taxpayer return on investment of any state in the country. So I was pretty happy to see that. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, You know, we're a state with small government. We're a state that requires a lot of different stakeholders to work together to find solutions, as we've talked about many times. It forces creativity and innovation in government. And if it was really a direct line between the revenue and the taxation that a government charges and what the services are that they can provide to their citizens, then there would be a case. But time and time again, you see New Hampshire's economy really rocking. Mm-hmm. In that context of low taxes, of small government, of efficient use of means, and a strong financial basis for the entire state, those are points that you got to pay attention to.
Filling medical leave insurance, as we switch gears over to State House, is big topic conversations. Crossover has started here on Wednesday and will continue tomorrow with bills being voted upon in the House and Senate. And the governor expected to veto both versions of family medical leave insurance from the House as well as the Senate. When you talk to businesses across the state, what is the need for a family medical leave insurance resolution here? And do you feel that it's time for the governor, Senator Feltes, and Representative Wallner to kind of get in a room together and figure out what's the best option here?
Yeah, I think we do, because, I mean, the whole issue of child care and at the same time trying to, as we've talked about so many times, recruit a younger workforce to the state. It's important to people to be able to say, I either want to have a double income into my family, or I want to have a reasonable alternative for education, early childhood care, whatever the cases may be. And, you know, some people might just want to have a daycare. Some people might want to have, you know, a little bit more of an educational component to that. But once you get too far beyond the what I'll call the sort of urban core, mm-hmm. if we have that in New Hampshire, it starts to trail off pretty quickly. And I do believe that it is connected to the overall ability for those communities and for businesses in those communities to attract that younger demographic that we need statewide.
And when you look at the budget in its entirety, which is going through the process right now, what stands out to you as being the most significant parts of that budget for business development, growth, and retainment here in the Granite State?
Well, you know, there was one provision that was in the governor's budget that didn't get a lot of attention. And I don't know the status of it right now within the legislature, but the governor proposed a $32 million student debt elimination program. Mm-hmm. And while the details were somewhat thin in terms of how that program would work, it put a lot of that planning and that structuring process on the Business Finance Authority. But the basic idea was to say that if you were willing to stay in New Hampshire for 4 or 5 years and you had student debt, that the state would come in and either phase that down or completely eliminate that debt. And that was the first time that any state had said anything like that. It was a unique component of the governor's budget, and it was something that I felt was really going to be helpful to all of these sort of issues that we've been talking about. There's so many ways that you can address the student debt issue. You can address it either on the front side by telling universities that you can't charge so much, mm-hmm. or you can address it on the back side by doing something like this. And there's lots of ways that you can structure it by handling
the
debt
issue. Have to fight the interest issue, and you know, it's important for the state and the government to. And I understand the fairness aspect of things. I've paid off my student loans. One of the few of millennials who's been able to do that. So I understand, you know, the aspect of, oh, they're going to have their debts forgiven, and I've actually paid it off. And I get that aspect of things. And there's a lot of folks that say that. But it is very important for our economy to have individuals have access to credit so they can purchase homes, start businesses, and things of that nature, and for there to be more free-flowing capital, which is invested within our economy. This has to take place. Students are saddled with this debt. The debt is unfair, in my view. I think you have to fight the rates of which individuals are having to pay back the high interest debt. And so I think that this is a significant issue that needs to get addressed and not just talked about. And I like the fact the governor has pushed forth a proposal in regards to that. In conclusion, I want to talk a little about something we were discussing on the I'm Listening show with Peter Evers and Jay Lucas. And we were talking about the Newport Sunshine Initiative. And a topic that came up was kind of the change in workforce attitude and mentality. And particularly in small towns, rural New Hampshire and the rural parts of this country, where individuals for generations would go and work at the mill. They'd work at, again, this is broad generalities, mm-hmm. but they'd work at the mill. They'd work at the factory. And their kids watched them do that and give themselves to that. And the parents felt like they had a place in the town and the community. And then all of a sudden, the mills left and shut down. And parents were, you know, wondering if they'd been lied to about the American dream and so forth. And the worker seems to have changed. And the worker is a person that works many jobs over a period of time. Peter referred to it as the gig economy, which I liked. You just get one gig to the other to the next, yeah. as opposed to saying, oh, I'm going to stay in this job for 35, 40 years.
Actually, call it the same thing, the North Country gig economy.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's – what is the – how do you adapt to that new reality where individuals are, you know, looking for gig to gig, they're contracting, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, looking for sustainable long-term mm-hmm. employment – and how does that affect our workforce issue?
This is one of those really, really big 100,000-foot future-looking sort of issues to me. First of all, with regard to the sort of single-employer communities that we had for so many decades in the northern and western parts of the state, and really all across the state, the mills, you know, you're right. You had this sort of almost socialist-like culture where you had one individual company that was taking care of everybody. You know, everybody worked at the mills. The families took care, you know, the wives took care of the kids. The kids were guaranteed jobs in the mills. All the yep. ancillary things that were required for daily life were provided by the mills. In fact, that's why all of our roads in New Hampshire go north-south. They follow the rivers.
Yep.
Because none of the mill barons wanted anyone from right. their labor force going to any of the other mills.
Yep.
But
like the pillar of the community was the church,
yep.
the yep. mill, and the school.
Yeah.
And that was it.
And you take that away, and after decades, and what you're left with is a community that is used to for generations having those sorts of things provided for and being very risk averse. I really think that you know, the whole saying in New Hampshire is someone from away. I think that really sort of comes from the attitude of those days where you didn't want people from away because one, that was going to take a job, but might also stir up the sort of societal structure that had been put in place there. And so it takes away a lot of the risk capability for people to really kind of say, I'm going to go out on my own, I'm going to start a business, I'm going to do these sort of things, I'm going to try a new job, I'm going to try something new. It takes a lot of that away culturally for generations. So that's problem number one. I think problem number two that we're looking at it more seriously now is as this sort of fourth industrial revolution comes upon us, where we're transitioning from the industrial revolution to the digital revolution.
Yep.
You know, we have to start thinking about how are people going to survive in jobs that are not going to be necessary over the next however many years, 20, 30, 50, 100 years. And it's an issue of retooling our education systems, retooling our training mm-hmm. systems, retooling the way that we move people through our educational pathways. And this was a big mistake, honestly, that was made way back in the 90s when they passed NAFTA, when they said, we're just going to pass this, it's going to work great. But that was going to fundamentally change a lot of industries in the country, and no concern was given to that.
Yeah,
it was a mistake. And I don't want to see us make the same mistake on a larger scale now to this transition.
Yeah, I see us moving more towards increased concentrated wealth as opposed to more diversified wealth. And I'm not a big proponent of government solving these types of problems, but it's a problem that needs to get addressed and discussed within the labor force and within employers and chambers of commerce and mm-hmm. within government about how to address this issue. Because concentrated wealth in an economy which is moving more and more towards tech and those and solutions based in tech is not sustainable in my view moving forward. We got to head out, but that was a really, really good conversation today. Taylor Caswell joining us here on the program. He is the Business and Economic Affairs Commissioner joining us here on the Hampshire Now program. This hour of the show brought to you by ARP New Hampshire as well as the Concord Food Co-op, and that segment of the show presented by the Barley House.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.